Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
Coming up a little later, a conversation I'm looking forward to having, but kind of not looking forward to having because it's one of the last conversations, if not the last, that I will have on the radio with Dr. Ron DeHaven, retiring president CEO of the American Veterinary Medical Association, who has done so much good for veterinary medicine. He's become a friend, I am proud to say. But what I want to talk to Dr. DeHaven about is sort of where we're going, what the future is going to look like. So I will ask him to bring out his crystal ball, and we will all discover what he thinks as far as where we're going with veterinary medicine. I hope it's not in this direction, cloning pets. ViaGen Pets just announced that they have a new sort of procedure and cost price for cloning pets, $50,000. To clone a dog. That is their discount rate now. For cats, it's $25,000. And to tell you the truth, I don't know what you think, but I'm not a fan of this. For one thing, there are misconceptions about it. So a cloned animal is genetically alike by definition, but it doesn't mean it will look alike. Believe it or not, that's true. So if, say, you want to clone your beloved beagle who passed away, and get a beagle that looks just like the beagle you had, odds are that if you, and I'll try to explain this, that if you go back to the breeder you originally got that beagle from and it's the same family tree, you get a beagle puppy from that breeder, that dog will look alike. Getting the cloned animal can look alike. Which one's going to look more alike? It's kind of a shot in the dark. A cloned animal won't necessarily be identical in looks to the animal that you're, quote, replacing. And that's the other thing. Our animals could never, in my opinion, be replaced. And what you're cloning that, getting that clone for is the personality, in most cases, even more than the looks. And that cannot be replicated. It just can't. First of all, in utero, diet has something to do, and other factors we don't even understand, with what that personality of the pet will be, but mostly life experiences once they're born, especially for puppies and kittens, you know, at a very young age. Well, a cloned animal that comes many years later is no way, no how going to have the same life experiences. It's impossible. It absolutely is. And you know, at the end of the day, in my opinion, all pets are one of a kind anyway. But it really has become a question about where you get your pets from. It's far more complicated today, in part because of the internet, which is great. Sites like PetFinder.com. Shelters go online and adopt a lot of animals that way. But some illegitimate, you know, puppy mills do that too. They adopt animals online, and you don't want to go to a puppy mill. So how can you tell where to get a pet from, where not to get a pet from? The president of the American Animal Hospital Association, Dr. Nancy Soares, I know you feel very strongly about this. Now, the good news, I think, is that more people are adopting than ever before, which I'm guessing you would agree is a good thing.
It is a good thing. It is a good thing. The more pets that we can help get out of shelter and rescue situations, that means the more that can come in to shelter and rescue situations. If 20% of Americans could open up their hearts and their homes to adopting a shelter or rescue pet, we'd have no need for shelters or rescues.
And to make clear, I think I know you well enough to know that we are not criticizing in any way people who want a pedigree or purebred dog. In fact, they're also, or cat, and they are also available through rescue.
Absolutely. A lot of them can end up in rescue situations for a variety of reasons, but the most common reason is for behavioral reasons. You know, families adopt a pet and they don't understand that that Australian Shepherd needs a lot of exercise and they need a lot of time during the day to think and to use the skills that they were bred to use. So that's how they can end up in those situations.
So it's just oftentimes bad matches that were made in the first place. Mm-hmm. And it's not that the pet necessarily did anything wrong. The Australian Shepherd, if we're talking about an Aussie, is just going to be an active dog. I mean, that's what they are. But for a family that is two people that are both over the age of 95, it probably is not a good fit. So is it oftentimes the pet has done nothing wrong, it's just circumstances? Sometimes an owner has passed away, sometimes financial problems for the family. For whatever reason, the pet is in the shelter. It is still then important to make the right match. How important is it to talk to the people in the shelter who are there every day that see that dog, or for that matter, that cat every day, and can tell you, this is the kind of cat, if you have a lap, the cat will be there.
Right.
Some people love that, but some people actually do not.
It is the most important determining factor when you're selecting a dog or a cat from a shelter. Talk to the staff. Talk to those that have spent time with them while they're there. They've seen their habits. They've seen their likes and dislikes. But that's going to give you the information that you need to make the right decision for yourself, not only for yourself and for your home, but for that animal, so they're not returned to a shelter again.
Sometimes the feel-good factor is true. I mean, it feels good to save a life. How can it not? And in fact, you might be saving a life. Now, you're a scientist. I'm going to ask you a very tough question. They say that when you rescue an animal, the animal knows it, and they are going to thank you for the rest of their lives. Am I being a bit too anthropomorphic?
I don't think so. I think that's so, so true. Having been owned by many shelter pets throughout my life, and I currently have 4 dogs at home and 2 cats at home that were all rescued in that same situation, I truly believe that we learn from them, but they are forever grateful, and they know that you've helped them.
So here is the lady of science telling me that. And you know what? At some level, I believe there is truth to that.
I do.
You know, it's incredible how that does work out. Now, when you adopt that pet from the shelter, the good news is that many shelters today do offer veterinary care to the animals in their care. Some don't, you know. But I still say the first place you go, because the veterinarians that are working at an animal shelter, it's called herd medicine is the term that professionals use. They're thinking about the bigger picture. They don't want infectious disease in the shelter. They're doing what they're supposed to do, but it's not like your own personal veterinarian.
Correct. It's a completely different discipline of medicine. And I have a lot of respect for those veterinarians that practice shelter medicine. It's hard. It's really hard.
I don't think there's a harder thing to do in some ways.
Mm-mm.
However, it's not the same as your own personal veterinarian.
Correct. And you want to take your newly adopted pet, stop by the veterinarian's office, schedule an appointment to have them examined. You want to get a lot of good education from your veterinary professionals so you can do the best by this animal, because they will absolutely do the best by you with their unconditional love.
And if there is an issue, then you have a resource to call, and a resource that has some basic blood work down and gets a feel at least for that pet's personality, which incidentally takes a couple of weeks and often a couple of months to actually come out.
It does. It takes more than just bringing them in, giving them a good warm bed and a bowl of food. It takes a lot of time, the bonding process, the communication process, but you don't want to change their personality. We want to integrate them into the home a little bit better, but it'll take weeks, so don't expect it to happen overnight.
Is it a good idea to adopt?
It is the best idea to adopt, because not only are you helping them, we always think, oh, we're helping those pets. The love and warmth that you get from that pet is the nearest and dearest thing. I can't even tell you the joy that it brings to families and people when you adopt that pet, because you learn so much from them.
Dr. Nancy Sorys, incoming president of the American Animal Hospital Association. I think this is good news. More and more people are adopting pets. Dr. Rhonda Haven is the CEO of the American Veterinary Medical Association. And I have sad news to announce, and I believe the pets in America and all of the farm animals will be picketing soon, because you are retiring.
I think I'm going to try it for the third time, Steve. This profession is so fantastic. I've actually had 3 careers. But what an honor and a pleasure to serve as the chief executive officer of the Association for all the veterinarians in this country and representing 88,000 members. So it has really been a terrific pleasure and an honor to serve this profession in this capacity.
What do you think your greatest accomplishment since
2007.
That's what I said. Okay, since 2007. What do you think the greatest accomplishment was?
You know, there's been several, so I don't know that I could say one, but let's focus on Partners for Healthy Pets. We brought an unprecedented coalition, 123 organizations, from veterinary colleges to pharmaceutical companies to national and even international veterinary associations, together for one purpose, and that is, let's make sure our pets get the preventive care that they deserve. We as a profession, particularly in the United States, have become the world's best at treating illness and injury. But we haven't done as good a job in terms of focusing on keeping our pets healthy. That's what this coalition is all about. And I'm really pleased to say that in the 5 or 6 years that Partners for Healthy Pets has been around, we're seeing a transition within the profession, starting with our colleges, but even with the average practitioner, where we're focusing more on preventive care, keeping our pets healthy. And then we're always there to treat the illness and injury. So I'm really proud of that.
As you should be.
The other is advocacy. You know, we advocate for the profession. So we don't advocate or don't work directly on behalf of the public, but rather by helping veterinarians, we're helping them take care of people's animals. So it's an indirect link where the work of the AVMA helps our pets, helps keep livestock and all kinds of species healthy, and in doing so, we're helping people. So advocating for the profession, for legislation that would either hinder or help the profession carry out its work, but also by taking positions and policies on behalf of the profession. What is adequate animal welfare for food animals, for example? Ensuring that veterinarians have access to the tools, to the pharmaceuticals that they need to do their job properly. So advocating for the profession.
Do you have a crystal ball?
I probably have as good a crystal ball as anyone at this point. And so, it's a changing environment.
It is. So one of the problems is the cost of doing anything in college, no matter what you want to pursue, but certainly veterinary medicine. So veterinarians come out of school being veterinarians, but having these ginormous, impossible loans to pay back, which has been in the news to some extent lately, not only veterinarians, but in general. So that's one issue. On the other hand, we've seen a decline that may be just a blip. I don't know. I hope it's just a blip in pet ownership. Maybe, as I say, it is just a blip. I don't know. We know pets are members of the family by enormously. I mean, depending on the numbers you look at, we're talking 90% of pet owners plus consider their pet a member of the family.
Right.
That's vastly different than 35 or 40 years ago. So you've got all these different moving parts. What will it look like? And one more thing I want to add to it, and that's what veterinarians can do. So as technology and science continues to advance, our pets are living in general longer than ever before. So putting all those moving parts together, what will it look like in, say, 15 years?
We could write books about any number of those issues
yes.
that you have talked about. The student debt issue is huge, as you point out. Our graduates are coming out of school with a student debt of about $140,000 on average and a starting salary of about $70,000. So these are kids that have spent 8, 10, 12 years becoming educated with a starting salary that is only half of their debt load. So that's a challenge in terms of what's going to be the inflow of individuals, bright individuals who want to become veterinarians. We are closer to our pets than ever before. That human-animal bond is stronger than ever. But at the same time, not everyone can afford premium veterinary care. So there's probably a way of providing adequate care or a range of care for those that just want the basic necessities for their pet and what they can afford versus the premium care that some pet owners want. So we as a profession need to be able to provide that spectrum. We can focus more on preventive care, and while it's costly, it's probably much cheaper than treating an illness or injury. So by focusing on preventive care, we can help to lower that overall cost of giving pets the care that they should have.
Pets will miss you. Animals will miss you. You've contributed to the profession as much as anyone I've ever met.
Well,
so thank you.
You warm my heart.
It's true.
I have to say that the profession has been so good to me.
Thank you. Thank you, Ron DeHaven.
Thank you, Steve.
Sean, who's producing for me, told me about an instance where, because I talk a lot about leaving dogs in hot cars, and I even did a video as Jimmy DeCastro, the chief in charge of everything, the deacon at WGN Radio, said when he heard me talk about leaving dogs in hot cars and how we would feel, he said, "Steve, why don't you sit in a hot car?" And I did. But moreover, I did it with my wife's fake fur coat on, because dogs are always wearing their fur coats, right? And it was only 80 degrees and in 15 minutes, and we had a GoPro and other cameras shoot this. The GoPro, though, is supposed to be this heavy-duty camera that can hold up to anything. It kept dying because it was too hot. And it ended up being over 120 degrees in like 16, 15 minutes like that. You know, and it wasn't an especially hot day. That was one of those days we had the windows down a bit. Nice cool breeze off Lake Michigan. It was about 80 degrees. We were on the roof appropriately of the Anti-Cruelty Society. So what Sean said is that someone did rescue a dog from a hot car. It wasn't in Chicago, but did do the right thing and was actually ticketed. So what I tell people to do is first call the authorities. Wherever you are, call the authorities, Chicago area or not. At least that way you're on the record. Now, if they don't come out and come out promptly, and I mean promptly, and if you think that dog is really in trouble, then take action. But at least then you're on the record as saying, you know what? I did the right thing. I called the police. I can't help it that they did not respond. And in many places, it's the law where they must respond.